Ravel.ca/donate wants to help you reduce household clutter in 4 easy steps. Step 1, take the cushions off your sofa. Step 2, see those coins down there? That leads us to step 3, gather those coins together and count them up. Step 4, get that mess out of your house by donating it to Ravel.ca/donate. If you're not into cleaning, Ravel.ca will take checks and online donations as well. Whether you've got a tidy house or a messy nest, it's you that keeps Ravel.ca running. Please give. Ravel.ca/donate.
This is a public service announcement.
Radio. Live transmission.
Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Know your rights. These are your rights.
Hello, this is the JHR Rights Report. Broadcast on CKUT, 90.3 FM, and podcast online at rabble.ca. Now airing in Africa on Pravda Radio, 93.5 in Accra, Ghana. I'm Adam Bema with Journalists for Human Rights. This week I speak to Kenyan women's rights advocate Flora Terra about the International Criminal Court's case against high-profile politicians in Kenya. But now it's time for the Social Media Minute.
For Mashable, I'm Lauren Gorris. Twitter's plan to give Twitter the silent treatment after the company announced it's now able to censor tweets and accounts on a country-by-country basis, users started to get organized. The Twitterati are calling all hands on TweetDeck to boycott Twitter and refuse to tweet for 24 hours. D-Day is set for Saturday, January 28th. Their weapon of choice to spread the word? Hashtag Twitter Blackout. Embracing the call to arms are groups like Anonymous, who say, at Anon Central, hashtag Twitter Blackout, will not tweet on Saturday, January 28th for the whole day. Who wants to join? Even user Carmen San Diego came out of hiding to say, at Sassy Steph B, join the Twitter blackout. Let them know that censorship is never okay. The Huffington Post reports no one can pinpoint the origin, but the viral campaign is gaining international attention. Tweets tagged with the hashtag are rolling in at a clip of about 12 per minute. The tweets span a range of languages, including English, German, Spanish, and Arabic. In a blog post, Twitter has clarified its stance, saying international growth will change the Twitterverse since different countries have different ideas about freedom of expression. One of our core values as a company is to defend and respect each user's voice. We try to keep content up wherever and whenever we can, and we will be transparent with users when we can't. The tweets must continue to flow. Be careful, Twitter. As the saying goes, birds of a feather flock together. From Mashable, I'm Lauren Gorris.
All right, last week we discussed censorship on Twitter, and we were talking about terror tweets and Al-Shabaab and the Taliban, who are now using social media, sending out tweets and information. Now, what are we seeing lately with Twitter? I've heard that they've actually talked about censoring certain tweets.
Well, Adam, that's it. This has actually been a pretty controversial topic in the last week or so. Last week, there was actually an announcement by Twitter that said that they were going to start censoring tweets by some users in those countries, and that's really to abide to the local laws. There has been a lot of protests that have gone out, not just online, but also in the real world. The hashtag Twitter Blackout was used thousands and thousands of times on January 28, 2012. And there have even been some local protests here in Montreal, San Francisco, Cairo, and especially Cairo, because that Twitter is actually one of the tools that helped get Mubarak out of office and help kind of fuel the Arab Spring.
So these were physical protests as opposed to the online protest hashtag Twitter Blackout.
Yeah, that's it. And also, what people have to keep in mind is that when Twitter was built, it was never built to be a social tool. Twitter is a business before anything. And like any business, they have to expand in new territory, in new countries. And in order for them to do that, then they have to abide to the local laws. Now, Twitter is staying extremely transparent with this. They don't want to hide anything from the users. And they have explained exactly what they're going to do. And they're working a lot with the users in order to find a common ground between the government and the users as well.
Right. From what I read, it would say tweet censored in that specific country. But if you're anywhere else in the world, you could still read the tweet.
Well, that's it. It would just take, I think it would say withheld or something like that. Yeah. So there was a lot of speculation that they were doing this to actually get into the Chinese market. Mm-hmm. Because right now China is not is not allowing for Twitter to be there. But honestly, I don't think that's going to happen, because the way that it's looking right now is that it's not going to be an automatic system where people just put in a hashtag and then all of those hashtags cannot be seen in a specific country. It's really going to have to be manual. So the government of let's say China is going to have to really take that tweet and then send an email to Twitter and be like, can you remove this tweet so other people can't see it?
So it'll be a big process that not a lot of people will want to do. Now, we've seen other companies like Google, for example, in China, and they've started restricting content when it comes to Googling Tiananmen Square protests or Tibet. Now, are we going to see this on Twitter? Are we going to see the Chinese or other, you know, authoritarian governments moving in and trying to put more pressure on Twitter to change?
Well, yeah, definitely. And you also have to keep in mind that because of what happened with Google, it's a very slippery slope right now. Twitter is trying to really compromise here. And I think what's really great is that Twitter as a company, they're really trying to stay as transparent as possible to the user. And you know, the people protesting and stuff, they also have to understand that Twitter right now can make a lot of money. They can make a lot of revenue, but they're not doing it. They're not putting that much ads on their service. But they will. They have plans for it. They said that in 2012, in the last quarter, they will start putting ads in your timeline and stuff, because they have to. That's just something they have to do. And in order for them to make more revenue, they have to expand into these new countries and abide with the laws.
And are we going to see more of a backlash from Twitter users?
I think there definitely is going to be a backlash. The anonymous official account actually did the entire Twitter blackout on the 28th. And there's definitely going to be a lot of resistance when it comes to Twitter censoring tweets. But people also have to keep in mind that the tweets are only going to be censored in those countries, and people outside of those countries are still going to be able to see them.
Well, thank you so much for your time. That was Damiano R, the Rights Report social media correspondent. Follow him on Twitter, at Damiano R, or for more Rights tweets, at JHRConYou. In international human rights headlines, Reporters Without Borders released their annual World Press Freedom Index. The 179-country list shows Yemen, Bahrain, and Syria with some of the worst rankings in the world. According to RSF, the three Middle Eastern countries in the midst of Arab Spring protests have had serious offenses committed against journalists, mainly due to government crackdowns and state violence on protesters. For more information, go to rsf.org. Continuing with developments in Syria, Arab League monitors sent into the country to observe a proposed peace plan have fled due to increasing violence. The month-long observer mission was criticized from the beginning, but the most recent bloodshed proves Syria's president, Bashar al-Assad, will not settle for peace. The Arab League is now urging the United Nations Security Council to act on the matter. And the International Criminal Court's lead prosecutor, Luis Moreno Ocampo, is going after six high-profile politicians in Kenya. The ICC investigation stems from the 2007 post-election violence in the East African nation. Two of those being investigated are Deputy Prime Minister Uhuru Kenyatta and former Education Minister William Ruto. Now to JHR Toronto correspondent Mo Mara with more on the ICC and Kenya.
Well, the situation in Kenya, it's quite dire, because if you look back in 2007, when the conflict started around just after the elections, when Raila Odinga lost to the incumbent president Mwai Kibaki, you would see that there was a mass protest in the country because people were not satisfied with the election results, and this led to a mass civil unrest, and people started demonstrating. And when the demonstration started, everybody thought this was not going to be something tribalistic, you know. But at the end, you have the Kikuyus fighting against the other tribes. And once it came back to the capital, the slums of the capital around which are mostly in the eastern part of Nairobi were the parts that were mostly affected. And so it escalated to a level wherein people started getting burned in churches, and people started getting killed on the street. And even if you show up in demonstrations on the street, even if it was peaceful, it was meant to show your dissatisfaction with the way government works or to the way the elections were run. I think it's under international law, it's unacceptable, and it is based on one of these reasons that I think it led to a much bigger protest, and especially when the international community, the ICC, the International Criminal Court, got involved and they decided to call on the conflicting parties to get involved in it in some way and try to stop the violence. That's when we saw Kofi Annan was sent there to mediate between the conflicting parties and try to kind of bring in a government of national reconciliation and bring Raila Odinga's party and Mwai Kibaki's people to get a dialogue and at least stop the blood, reduce the bloodshed.
Even like a refugee, is not easy.
That was Sierra Leonean journalist Mo Mara in Toronto. To find out more on the ICC investigation into post-election violence in Kenya, I speak to women's rights advocate and Kenyan parliamentary candidate Flora Terra.
Yes, in as much as we are not a failed state, we are not yet prepared to set up a tribunal or to take these people through our courts, because we still have the institutions that are very weak. We still cannot trust our court with these four individuals. So the International Criminal Court is just backing us, backing the Kenyans who do not trust the institutions. And we are not throwing our sons away to the fallen land. We've just told them, look here, you were given a chance to set up a tribunal, a local tribunal, to try you people. You refused, because the local tribunal is not set up by the people of Kenya. It's set up by a clique of politicians who are 222 members of our society. If they cannot, as the lawmakers, set a local tribunal, what will the Kenyan citizen do? We've trusted them with that particular institution, and they refused. So they took themselves to the egg. Had they set up that tribunal, then we would be watching it, not on the national television or radio. We would have been traveling all the way to come and hear what they have to say about the killings, the raping, and the displacement of people, you know, forceful transfer of masses of people. We would, but we took ourselves to the International Criminal Court by refusing to establish a local tribunal.
Now, all this investigation stems from the violence after the 2007 election?
Yeah, it was the violence there. The court feels they bear the greatest responsibility because of financing and the meetings. That is all, not Flora saying, that's the investigation saying. But they're innocent until proven guilty. But the good part of it is, I was reading from the news today that they took the moral responsibility to resign, to step aside. And the two senior most, one is the presidential advisor, and the other one is the minister of finance, who also tops up to be the deputy prime minister. He stepped down, he stepped aside because of that. And I guess that's a step to the right direction.
That was Kenyan women's rights advocate and 2007 parliamentary candidate, Flora Terra. Back to Mo Mara now, reporting on the legal proceedings against Africa's first head of state to be tried at The Hague, Liberia's Charles Taylor.
I solemnly declare
that I will speak the truth.
That I will speak the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Now, Mr. Taylor, as you are aware, you are charged on an indictment containing 11 counts, which alleges that you are everything from a terrorist to a rapist. What do you say about that?
I am none of those, have never been, and will never be, whether they think so or not. I am a father of 14 children, grandchildren, with love for humanity, have fought all my life to do what I thought was right in the interest of justice and fair play.
Charles Taylor is in some way, I think, you know, when you keep doing evil things, at the end of the day, evil comes and haunts you. That's exactly what happened to Charles Taylor. Charles Taylor thought he was untouchable. He thought he was a man. It was an island of its own, and no man is an island. You can't live by yourself and think you are going to go out and go out free, and not no one touches you. That's the perception Charles Taylor had in the 80s and the 90s, up to the time when the civil war started in Sierra Leone. But with regards to what he is going through right now, but for the very fact that he was transferred from Africa, that the International Criminal Court decided to transfer the case from Sierra Leone, that of itself, it was a big blow to him, because what the European countries are doing is that they are targeting those warlords in some way that they have no chance to escape, and that's exactly what's happening to Charles Taylor. That's what's happening to Laurent Gbagbo of Ivory Coast, and that's probably what's going to happen with the former son of Jomo Kenyatta. You know, and I think it is justice at its best, because if you sacrifice the lives of hundreds of thousands of people at the expense of political power, what Charles Taylor did was a complete violation of international law. He brought civil war to Sierra Leone, and Sierra Leone had nothing to do with the conflict in Liberia. And he spearheaded conflicts in the whole West African sub-region, the ECOWAS. And at the end of the day, he used the diamonds, the natural resources from Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea, and Ivory Coast to buy more arms to fight more rebellion. So how can you justify this to me, that you're not responsible? I was a living witness. I saw the RUF, the Revolutionary United Front, rebels attacking civilians, villagers, and robbing them of the little money they have, the little food they have, the little clothing they have. So at the end of the day, you're not going to sit there in The Hague with one of the world's best defense lawyers and trying to convince the world that you're going to walk out free. It's wrong. Charles Taylor is guilty. He knows what he did, and he knew what he was engaging in, and that is the reason why he's now paying the price. And I think he absolutely deserves to go to jail.
Did you ever order the trademark atrocity of the Sierra Leonean conflict, amputations?
It's impossible for that to have ever been ordered by me. Well, we heard that in people were getting killed, women were getting raped, and different things, and we couldn't understand it. I could not understand it, because these are things that we did not tolerate in Liberia. There's been no evidence before these judges.
That was JHR correspondent Mo Mara on former Liberia President Charles Taylor. I'm Adam Bemmen. You're listening to the JHR Rights Report, broadcast on CKUT 90.3 FM and podcast online at rabble.ca. Now airing in Africa on Pravda Radio 93.5 in Accra, Ghana. You got to sleep on top of, and that's this edition of the JHR Rights Report. I'm Adam Bemmen with Journalists for Human Rights. I leave you now with a song called Living Like a Refugee by Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars. Thanks for listening.
Living like a refugee, ooh, is not easy.
Oh, we on time.
Living like a refugee,
oh, nah,
is not easy.
It's really not easy.
Living like a refugee, it's not easy.
I want to hear my solos. Franco,
nah.
You don't get your supply.
Computer, don't forget me anymore.
Lord have mercy, computer again. Arahim,
sir.
You don't get your tarpaulin.
Protection, don't consider me.
Lord have mercy. Nature,
nine.
You don't get your medicine. I said to Cissé again, Kadia to Kamara, Kadia to Kamara again, hey, Kadia to Kamara, no day. Bolon Pasa Ibonam. Mohamed Bangura again. For the Cissé again. Francis Boma again. You know, they are things you will go pass some more. What am I saying?
country to seek refuge in another man's land. You left your country to seek refuge in another man's land. You will be confronted by strange dialect. You will be fed with unusual diets. You've got to sleep in a tarpaulin house, which is so hot. You got to sleep on a tarpaulin mat, which is so cold. Oh, we on time.
Living like a refugee.
Oh, nah.
It's not easy.
It's really not easy.
Living like a refugee. It's not easy.
Oh, we on time.
Living like a refugee.
Oh, nah.
It's not easy.
We
living like a refugee. It's not easy.
It's really not easy.